Osho, From Misery to Enlightenment, Answers to the Seekers of the Path, given in Rajneeshpuram, Oregon, USA, Discourse Number 2.
Book 1. What is meditation?
It is the most important question. As far as my religion is concerned, it is the very center of my whole effort . It is the very womb out of which the new religion is going to be born. But it is very difficult to verbalize it . To say something about meditation is a contradiction in terms. It is something which you can have, which you can be but by its very nature, you cannot say it. Still, efforts have been made to convey in some way, even if only fragmentary, partial understanding arises out of it. That is more than one can expect. But even that partial understanding can become a seed. Much depends on how you listen. If you only hear, then even a fragment cannot be conveyed to you. But if you listen, and try to understand the difference between the two, hearing is mechanical. You have the ears. You can hear. If you are getting deaf, then a mechanical aid can help you to hear. Your ears are nothing but a certain mechanism to receive sounds. Hearing is very simple. Animals hear. Anybody who has ears is capable of hearing, but listening is a far higher stage. Listening means when you are hearing, you are only hearing and not doing anything else. No other thoughts in your mind. No clouds passing in your inner sky. So whatever is being said reaches as it is being said, not interfered by your mind, not interpreted by you, your prejudices. Not clouded by anything that is right now passing within you. Because all these are distortions. Ordinarily, it is not difficult. You go on managing just by hearing. Because the things that you are hearing are common objects. If I say something about the house, the door, the tree, the bird, there is no problem. These are common objects. No need of listening. But when we are talking about something like meditation, which is not an object at all, it is a subjective stage. We can only point out, you have to be very attentive and alert. Then there is a possibility that some meaning reaches to you. And even if a little understanding arises in you, it is more than enough. Because understanding has its own way of growing. Just a little bit of understanding falls in the right place in the heart and it starts growing on its own accord. First, try to understand the word meditation. It is not the right word for the state about which any authentic seeker is bound to be concerned. So I would like to tell you something about few words. In Sanskrit, we have a special word for meditation. The word is dhyana. In no other language, a parallel word exists. That word is untranslatable. It has been recognized for 2000 years that this word is untranslatable for the simple reason that in no other language people have tried or experienced the state that it denotes. So those languages don't have that word. A word is needed only when there is something to say, something to designate. In English there are three words. First is concentration. I have seen many books written by very well-meaning people but not people who have experienced meditation. They go on using the word concentration for dhyana. Dhyana is not concentration. Concentration simply means your mind focused on one point. It is a state of mind. Ordinarily, the mind is continuously moving. But if it continuously moves, you cannot work with the mind on a certain subject. For example, in science, concentration is needed. Without concentration, there is no possibility of science. It is not strange that science has not evolved in the East. I see these deep inner connections because concentration was never valued. For religion, something else is needed, not concentration. Concentration is mind focused on one point. It has its utility, because then you can go deeper and deeper into a certain object. That's what science goes on doing, to finding more and more about the objective world. A man with a mind which is continuously roaming around cannot be a scientist. The whole art of the scientist is that he is capable of forgetting the whole world and putting his whole consciousness on one thing. And when whole consciousness is poured into one thing, then it is almost like concentrating sun rays through a lens, and then you can create fire. Those rays themselves cannot create fire because they are diffused. They are going from each other farther away, just opposite concentration. That is their movement. Concentration means rays coming together, meeting on one point. And when so many rays meet on one point, they have enough energy to create fire. Consciousness has the same quality. Concentrate it, and you can penetrate deeper into the mysteries of objects. I am reminded of Thomas Alva Edison, one of the great scientists of this country. He was working on something so concentrated that his wife came with his breakfast, but seeing him so much involved that he had not even heard her coming, he had not even looked at her, he is not aware that she is there. And she knew that this is not the right time to disturb him. Of course, the breakfast will get cold. But he will be really angry if I disturb him. One never knows where he is. So she simply put the breakfast by his side, that whenever he is back from his journey of concentration, he will see the breakfast and take it. But what happened? Meanwhile, a friend dropped by. He also saw him so concentrated, and he looked at the breakfast getting cooler, so he said, better let him do his work, I should finish the breakfast first. It is getting cooler. He ate the breakfast. And Edison is not aware even of this, that his friend is there and he has eaten his breakfast. When he returns back from his concentration, he looked around, saw the friend, saw the empty plates. He told the friend, please forgive me, you came a little late. I have taken my breakfast. Obviously, because the plates were finished, somebody has eaten, and who can eat? He must have eaten. And the poor friend could not understand what to do. He was thinking to give him a surprise. This man gives him a bigger surprise. He says, You came a little late. But the wife was watching the whole thing. She came in and she said, he has not come late. You have come late. He has finished your breakfast. And I have been watching, but I saw that it is anyway getting colder. At least somebody eats it. And you are some scientist. How you manage your science, I cannot understand. The wife said, you don't know even who has eaten the breakfast. And you are asking his apology that you came a little late. I'm sorry. Concentration is always narrowing of your consciousness. The narrower it becomes, the more powerful it is. It is like a sword to cut into any secret of nature. You have to become oblivious of everything. But this is not religion. Many people have misunderstood, not only in the West, but in the East too, that concentration is religion. It gives you tremendous powers, but those powers are of the mind. For example, the king of Varanasi in India went through an operation in 1920. Just in this century, and created a news all over the world because of his operation. He refused to take any anesthetic. He said, I have taken a vow of not taking anything that makes me unconscious. So I cannot put under chloroform. But you need not be worried. And it was a major operation of his appendix. Now to take somebody's appendix without giving him anesthetics is really dangerous. You may kill the man. He may not be able to bear the pain. The pain is going to be terrible. You have to cut his stomach, you have to remove, you have to cut his appendix, you have to remove it, it will take 1 hour, 2 hours, one never knows what condition his appendix is. But he was no ordinary man either. Otherwise they would have forced him. He was the king of Varanasi. He said, but you don't be worried to the doctors, and the best doctors available in India were there. One expert from England was there. They all consulted that nobody was ready to do this operation. But the operation has to be done, otherwise any moment the appendix can kill the man. The state is serious. Both the alternatives seem to be serious. If you leave him without operation, he may die. If you do the operation without making him unconscious, which has never been done, there is no precedent. But the king said, you don't understand me. There has never been any precedent because you have never operated like a man. You are going to operate upon. You just give me my religious book, Srimad Bhagavad Gita. I will read it, and after 5 minutes, you can start your work. Once I am involved in Gita, then you can cut any part of my body. I will not be even aware of it. There is no question of pain. And when he insisted, and anyway he was going to die, there was no harm to try. Perhaps he is right, and he was well known for his religious practices. And this was done. He read the Gita for 5 minutes, closed his eyes, the Gita dropped from his hands, and they did the operation. It took 1.5 hours. It was really serious. Only few hours more, and the appendix may have exploded and killed the man. They removed the appendix, and the man was completely there, silent. Not even a flicker of his eyes. He was somewhere else. That was his lifelong practice. Just to read for 5 minutes, then he was on the track. He knew the Gita verbally. He could repeat it without the book. Once he started going into Gita, then he was in the Gita. His mind was there. It left his whole body. That operation made a news all over the world. It was a rare operation. But the same mistake was committed again. Every news carried it that the Raja, the king of Varanasi, is a man of great meditation. He was a man of great concentration, not of meditation. He also was in the same confusion. He also thought that he has reached to the state of meditation. It is not. Just your mind is so focused that everything else falls out of its focus. You are unaware of it. It is not a state of awareness. It is a state of narrowed consciousness, so narrowed that it becomes one-pointed and the whole existence falls out of it. So before I answer you what is meditation, you have to understand what it is not. First, it is not concentration. Second, it is not contemplation. Concentration is one-pointed. Contemplation has a wider field. You are contemplating about beauty. There are thousands of things which are beautiful. You can go on moving from one beautiful thing to another. You have many experiences of beauty. You can go on from one experience to another. You remain confined to the subject matter. Contemplation is a wider concentration. Not one-pointed, but confined to one subject. You will be moving. Your mind will be moving. But you will remain within the subject matter. Philosophy uses contemplation as its method. Science uses concentration as its method. In contemplation also, you are forgetting everything else than your subject matter. The subject matter is bigger and you have more space to move. In concentration, there is no space to move. You can go deeper and deeper, narrower and narrower. You can become more pointed and more pointed, but you don't have space to move around. Hence, scientists are very narrow-minded people. You will be surprised when I say this. One should think that scientists should be very open-minded. That is not the case. As far as their subject is concerned, they are absolutely open-minded. They are ready to listen anything against it, contrary to their theory, and with absolute fairness. But except that particular matter, they are more prejudiced, more bigoted than the ordinary common man. For the simple reason, because they have never bothered about anything else. They have simply accepted whatsoever society believes in. Many religious people brag about it, that look, he is such a great scientist, a Nobel Prize winner, and this and that, and yet he comes every day to the church. They forget completely, it is not the Nobel Prize winner scientist who comes to the church. It is not the scientist who comes to the church. It is the man accept his scientific part that comes to the church, and that men accept the scientific part is far more gullible than anybody else, because everybody is open, available, thinks about things, compares what religion is good. Sometimes reads also about other religions and has some common sense which scientists don't have. To be a scientist, you have to sacrifice few things. For example, common sense. Common sense is a common quality of common people. A scientist is an uncommon person. He has an uncommon sense. With common sense, you cannot discover theory of relativity or the law of gravitation. With common sense, you can do everything else. For example, Albert Einstein was perhaps the only man in history who dealt with such big figures that only one figure will take the whole page. Hundreds of zeros following it. But he became so much involved with big figures, which is uncommon. He was thinking only of stars, light years, millions, billions, trillions of stars, and counting them, and that about small things, he became oblivious. One day, he entered a bus. Gave the money. The conductor returned some change. He counted it and said, "This is not right. You are cheating me." "Give me the full change." The counter took the change and counted it again and said, "Mister, it seems you don't know figures." Einstein remembers it, that when he said to me, "Mister, you don't know figures," then I simply took the change. I said, "It is better to keep silent. If somebody else hears it that I don't know figures, and that too from a conductor of a bus, what have I been doing my whole life? Figures and figures. I don't dream about anything else. No women appear, no men appear. Only figures. I dream in figures. I think in figures." And this idiot says to you that you don't know figures. When he came back home, he told his wife, "Just count this change, how much it is." She counted it and she said, "It is this much." He said, "My God, that means that conductor was right. Perhaps I don't know figures. Perhaps I can only deal with immense figures. Small figures have fallen out of my mind completely. A scientist is bound to lose his common sense. The same happens to the philosopher. Contemplation is wider, but is still confined to a certain subject. For example, one night Socrates was thinking about something. One never knows what he was thinking about. Standing by the side of a tree, and he became so absorbed in his contemplation that he completely became oblivious that snow is falling. And in the morning he was found almost frozen. Up to his knees there was the snow, and he was standing there with closed eyes. He was almost on the verge of death, because even his blood may have started freezing. He was brought home, massage was given to him, alcohol was given to him, and somehow he was brought to his common sense. And they asked, what you were doing there, standing outside in the open? He said, I had no idea that I am standing or sitting or where I am. The subject was so absorbing. I went totally with it. I don't know when the snow started falling, when the whole night passed. I would have died, but I would not have come to my senses, because the subject was so absorbing. I was still unfinished. It was a whole theory. And you have awakened me in the middle. Now I don't know whether I will be able to get hold of the unfinished theory. It is just like you are dreaming and somebody wakes you up. Do you think you can catch hold of your dream again by just closing your eyes and trying to sleep? And it is very difficult to get back into the same dream. Contemplation is a kind of logical dreaming. It is a very rare thing. But philosophy depends on contemplation. Philosophy can use concentration for specific purposes to help contemplation. If some smaller fragments in it need more concentrated effort, then concentration can be used. There is no problem. Philosophy is basically contemplation, but can use concentration as a tool, as an instrument once in a while. But religion cannot use concentration. Religion cannot use contemplation either, because it is not concerned with any object. Whether the object is in the outside world or the object is in your mind, a thought, a theory, a philosophy, it doesn't matter. It is an object. Religious concern is with the one who concentrates, with the one who contemplates. Who is this one? Now you cannot concentrate on it. Who will concentrate on it? You are it. You cannot contemplate on it, because who is going to contemplate on it? You cannot divide yourself into two parts, that one part you put in front of your mind and the other part starts contemplating. There is no possibility of dividing your consciousness into two parts. And even if there was any possibility, there is none. Just for argument's sake, I am saying, if there was any possibility to divide your consciousness into, then the one that contemplates about the other is you. The other is not you. The other is never you. Or in other words, the object is never you. You are irreducibly the subject. There is no way to turn you into an object. It is just like a mirror. The mirror can reflect you, the mirror can reflect everything in the world, but can you manage to reflect this mirror itself? You cannot put this mirror in front of itself. By the time you put it in front of itself, it is no more there. The mirror itself cannot mirror itself. Consciousness is exactly a mirror. You can use it as a concentration for some object. You can use as contemplation for some subject matter. The English word meditation is also not the right word. Because there is no other word, we have to use it for the time being till dhyana is accepted. In English language, just as it has been accepted by the Chinese, by the Japanese, because the same was the situation. When 2000 years ago Buddhist monks entered China, they tried hard to find any word which can translate their word jhana. Gautam the Buddha never used Sanskrit as his language. He used a language that was used by common people. His language was Pali. Sanskrit was the language of the priesthood of the Brahmins. And it was one of the basic part of his revolution that priesthood should be thrown over. It has no business to exist. Man can directly connect with existence. It need not be through an agent. In fact, it cannot be through a mediator. You can understand it very simply. You cannot love your girlfriend, your boyfriend through a mediator. You cannot say to somebody that I will give you $10, you just go and love my wife on my behalf. A servant cannot do that. Nobody can do it on your behalf. You only have to do it. If love cannot be done on your behalf by a servant, otherwise rich people will not get bothered by all this greasy affairs. They have enough servants, enough money, and they can just send the servants. They can find the best servants. But why they should bother themselves? But there are few things which you have to do yourself. A servant cannot sleep for you. A servant cannot eat for you. How a priest who is nothing but a servant is going to mediate between you, existence, or God, or nature, or truth. In the latest Pope's message to the world, this is counted as a sin to try to have any direct contact with God. Sin. You have to contact God through a properly initiated Catholic priest. Everything should go through proper channel. There is a certain hierarchy, a bureaucracy, you cannot just bypass the bishop, the pope, the priest. You simply just bypass them. You are directly entering into God's house. This is not allowed. This is a sin. I was really surprised that this Pope the Pollock has some guts to call this a sin, that man has not the birthright to be in contact with existence or truth itself. For that too he needs a proper agency. And who is to decide the proper agency. There are 300 religions and all have their bureaucracies and their proper channels, and they say the remaining 299 are all bogus. But the priesthood can exist only if it makes itself absolutely necessary. It is absolutely unnecessary. But it has to force itself upon you as something unavoidable. Just now the Polak Pope is again on the tour. And yesterday I saw his picture in some Catholic country. He is kissing the earth. And he was asked by the news media that what do you think of the welcome? He said it was warm, but not overwhelming. Now, this man must be expecting. He is not satisfied with the warm. He must have been expecting an overwhelming reception, welcome. And when he says warm, you can be absolutely certain it must have been lukewarm. He is trying to exaggerate it as much as he can. Otherwise, a warm reception is overwhelming. What more you want? Hot dogs? Then it will be overwhelming. A warm reception is enough. But I know what is the problem. It must have been lukewarm, or perhaps even cold. And this man is going to call this year a synod, that is the Catholic Synod, in which all the bishops and cardinals of the whole Catholic world will meet to decide certain urgent matters. And you can be sure what are those urgent matters. Birth control is a sin. Abortion is a sin. And this new sin, which has never been mentioned before, to make an effort to be in direct contact with God is a sin. Now, the thesis that he has propounded, he is going to put it before the synod to get their agreement. Then it becomes an appendix almost as holy as Bible, if it is anonymously accepted by the synod, then it has the same status. And it is going to be accepted because no priest will say that this is wrong. No cardinal will say that this is wrong. They will be immensely happy that he has really an original mind. Even Jesus was not aware. When I received the message that any effort to make direct contact with God is sin, I wondered what Moses was doing. It was a direct contact. There was no mediator. There was no one present. There is no eyewitness when Moses met God in the burning bush. He was committing a great sin according to Pope the Pollock. Who was Jesus' agent? Some agency is needed. He was also trying to contact God directly, praying, and he was not paying somebody else to pray for him. He was praying himself. And he was not a bishop, not a cardinal, not a pope. Neither was Moses a bishop, or a cardinal, or a pope. These are all sinners. According to Pope the Pollock, and the synod is going to sign it, I can say, before it signs it, because all over the world the priesthood is in a shaky condition. And the truth is that it is your birthright to inquire into existence, into life, what it is all about. Contemplation is theoretical. You can go on theorizing. It also takes away your common sense. For example, Immanuel Kant is one of the greatest philosophers the world has produced. He remained his whole life in one town. For the simple reason that any change disturbs his contemplation. New house, new people. Everything should be exactly the same so that he is completely free to contemplate. He never got married. One woman had even offered. But he said, I will have to think over it. Perhaps that must be the only answer of its kind. Ordinarily, man proposes, She must have waited long enough when she found that this man is not going to propose. She proposed. And what he said, that I will have to think over it. And he contemplated for 3 years on all favorable points for marriage, on all unfavorable points against marriage. And the trouble was that they were all equal, balancing, canceling each other. So after 3 years, he went and knocked on the door of the woman to say that it is difficult for me to come to a conclusion because both the sides are equally valid, equally weighty, and I cannot do anything unless I find one alternative more logical, more scientific, more philosophical than the other. So please forgive me and you can get married to anybody else. The father opened the door. He asked about his daughter. The father said, you have come too late. She got married. She has even got one child now. You are some philosopher. 3 years after you have come to answer, and he said, anyway, the answer was not yes, but you can convey to your daughter that my inability to find out, I tried hard to find out, but I have to be fair. I cannot cheat myself by putting only favorable reasons and dropping unfavorable reasons. I cannot cheat myself. Now, this man used to go to the university to teach exact time every day. People used to fix their clocks and watches by seeing him. You could be certain second to second. He moved like the hand of a clock. His servant used to declare, not, Master, your breakfast is ready. No, Master, it is 7:30. Master, it is 12:30. There was no need to say that it is time for lunch. 12:30. Only time has to be told. Everything was fixed. He was so absorbed in his philosophizing that he became dependent, almost a servant to his own servant. Because the servant will threaten him any moment that I am going to leave. And the servant knew that he cannot afford. Few days it has happened that because he was threatening, Kant will say, yes, you can go. You are thinking yourself too much. You think I cannot live without you. I cannot find another servant. He said, you try. But the other servant will not work because he had no idea that time has to be declared. He will say, Master, lunch is ready. And that was it. Enough disturbance for him. He had to be awakened early in the morning, 5 o'clock, and the instructions for the servant were that even if I beat you, scream and say to you, get lost, I want to sleep, you are not to leave. Even if you have to beat me, you beat me, but pull me out of the bed. 5 means 5. If I am late getting out of bed, you will be responsible. You have all freedom to do whatsoever you want to do. And I cannot say, because sometimes it is too cold and I feel like sleeping. But that is a momentary thing. You need not bother about it. You have to follow the clock and my orders. And at that moment when I am asleep, you need not bother what I am saying. I may say, go away, I will get up. You are not to go away. You have to get me out of the bed 5 o'clock. And many times it was that they used to fight and the servant used to hit him and force him out of the bed. Now, who, a new servant, cannot do that to beat the master? And the very order seems to be absurd, that if you want to sleep, sleep. If you want to get up, get up. I can wake you up at 5, but this seems to be strange that there has to be a wrestling. So, no servant survived. Again, he had to go to the same servant and ask him to come back. Just don't die before me. Otherwise, I will have to commit suicide. Nobody. And each time this happened, the servant will ask more pay. And that's how it went on. Going to the university one day, it was raining and one of his shoes got stuck into the mud. He left the shoe there. Because if he tries to take the shoe out, he will be few seconds late. And that was not possible. With one shoe, he entered the class. The students looked at what happened. They asked what happened. He said, just one shoe got stuck into the mud. I cannot be late. So many people fix their watches and clocks. My shoe is not that important. Returning home, I will take it back because who is going to steal one shoe? Now, these people have lost their common sense. They are living in a different world. And as far as his theoretical world is concerned, he is a topmost logician. You cannot find any flaw in his logic. But in his life, that is just insane. somebody purchased a side house and he became sick, badly sick. The doctors could not find what is the problem, because there seems to be no sickness and he is almost on the verge of death for no reason at all. One of the French came by and he said, there is no problem as far as I see. The house by the side has been taken by somebody and they have grown their trees and his window is covered, and that was his absolute timetable, part of his absolute timetable, that he will stand in the window at the time of sunset and look at the sunset. Now the trees have grown too high, they have covered the window. That is his sickness and nothing else. His timetable is disturbed. His whole life is disturbed. And Kant stood up. He said, I was also thinking something is wrong. Why I am sick? Because doctors say there is no sickness and I am on the verge of death. You are right. Those trees, since those trees have grown, I have not seen the sunset. And I have been missing something, but I could not figure it out what it is that I am missing. Those neighbors were asked and they were willing that if just because of these trees such a great philosopher is going to die. They cut the trees and he was next day perfectly okay. His timetable, his schedule, or should I say schedule, I don't know what is right here. The first American girl met me sometime in 1960 and she asked me, what is your schedule? My God, what is a schedule? Yes. In Britain, in India, it is schedule. I could not figure it out that it has something to do with schedule. She said, you don't understand what I am saying. I said, this word I have never heard. You please try to explain me in some other way. Use some other word. It is better. Let me use schedule. His schedule was disturbed. If it was perfect, then he was absolutely free to contemplate. He wanted life to be almost robot-like, so his mind is absolutely free from ordinary mundane affairs. But religion is not contemplation. It is not concentration. It is meditation. But meditation has to be understood as meaning dhyana. Because the English word meditation again gives a wrong notion. A first try to understand what it means in English language itself. Because whenever you say meditation, you can be asked upon what? On what are you meditating? There has to be an object. The very word has a reference towards an object, that I am meditating upon beauty, upon truth, upon God. But you can't simply say, I am meditating. The sentence is incomplete in English language. You have to tell upon what? What are you meditating upon? And that is the trouble. Dhyana means I am in meditation. Not even meditating. If you come even more closer, then I am meditation. That is the meaning of dhyana. So when in China they could not find any word, they borrowed the word, the Buddhist word, jhana. Buddha used jhana. It is Pali transformation of dhyana. He used people's language as part of his revolution, because he said the religion has to use the ordinary common language so that the priesthood can be simply dropped out. There is no need. People understand their scriptures, people understand their sutras, people understand what they are doing. There is no need for a priest. The priest is needed because he uses a different language which people cannot use. And he goes on enforcing the idea that Sanskrit is the divine language. And everybody is not allowed to read it. It is a special language, just like doctors do. Have you ever thought about it? Why doctors go on prescribing in Latin and Greek words? What kind of foolishness is this? They don't know Greek, they don't know Latin. But their medicines and their names of medicines are always in Greek and Latin. This is the same trick as the priesthood. If they write in the common people's language, they cannot charge you that much as they are charging, because you will say, this prescription and you are charging me 20 rupees for this prescription. And the druggist, the chemist, cannot charge much money either, because they know what they can get from the market, the same thing, in just 1 rupee, and you are charging 50 rupees. But in Latin and Greek, you don't know what it is. If they write onion, then you will say, are you joking? But if it is written in Greek and Latin, you don't know what it is. Only he knows, or the chemist knows. And their way of writing is also important. It has to be written in such a way that you cannot read what it is. Because if you can read, perhaps you can consult a dictionary and find out what it means. It has to be quite unreadable. So you cannot figure it out. In fact, most of the times, even the chemist knows nothing about what it is. But nobody wants to show his ignorance, so he will give you something. It happened once, a man received a letter from his family physician, which was an invitation to participate into his daughter's marriage. But he wrote in his way, just habitually, the man could not read what this letter is. He thought the best way is, I can go to the chemist. Because perhaps something important. And if I go to the doctor himself, he will think me that you cannot read even. It is better to go to the chemist. He went to the chemist. He gave him the letter. The chemist simply disappeared with the letter. After 10 minutes, he came with 2 bottles. The man said, what are you doing? That was not a prescription. That was a letter. He said, my God, it was a letter. But he figured out the bride and bridegroom. He figured out the 2 bottles. So some mixtures he prepared and he brought those 2 bottles. Buddha revolted against Sanskrit and used Pali. In Pali, dhyan is jhana. Jhana reached China and became Chan. They had no other word, so they took the word. But in each language, the pronunciation is bound to change. It became Chan. When it reached to Japan, it became Zen. But it is the same word, dhyan. And we are using the word meditation in the sense of dhyan. So it is not something you meditate upon. In English, it is something between concentration and contemplation. Concentration is one pointed. Contemplation has a wide area. And meditation is a fragment of that area. When you are contemplating on certain subjects, there are few things which need more attention than you meditate. That is what meditation is in English. Concentration and contemplation are two poles. Exactly in the middle is meditation. But we are not using the word
in the English sense. We are giving it a new meaning totally. I will tell you a story that I have always loved, which will explain what is meditation. Three men went for a morning walk. They saw a Buddhist monk standing on the hill. Having nothing to do, they just started discussing what that fellow is doing. One said, as far as I can see from here, he is expecting somebody and waiting for him. Perhaps a friend is left behind and he is waiting and expecting him. The second man said, looking at him, I cannot agree with you. Because when somebody is waiting for a friend who is left behind, once in a while he will look back whether he has come yet or not, or how long I am going to wait. But this man never looks back, he is just standing there. I don't think he is expecting anybody. My feeling is that these Buddhist monks have cows. In Japan they have, for the morning tea, where you have to go to beg an early bed tea, and Zen monks drink tea at least 5-6 times a day. It is almost a religious thing to do, because tea keeps you awake, alert, more conscious. So they keep a cow in the monastery. So that second man said, my feeling is that his cow is lost somewhere, must have gone to graze, and he is just searching the cow. The third man said, I cannot agree, because when somebody searches a cow, he just need not stand like a statue. You have to move around, you have to go and look from this side and that side. He does not even change his face to one side to another side. What to say about face? Even his eyes are half closed. They are coming closer to the man, so they can see him more clearly. Then the third man said, I don't think. I think he is meditating. But how to decide who is right? They said, there is no problem. We are just coming close to him. We can ask him. The first man asked him, are you expecting any friend waiting for him who is left behind? The Buddhist monk opened his eyes and said, expecting? I never expect anything. Expecting anything is against my religion. The man said, my God, forget expecting. You just tell me, are you waiting? He said, my religion teaches you cannot be certain even of the next second. How can I wait? Where is time to wait? I'm not waiting. The man said, forget expecting, waiting, I don't know your language, you just tell me, have you left some friend behind? He said, again the same thing. I don't have any friend in the world, I don't have any enemy in the world, because they both come together. You cannot sort out one and leave the others. Can't you see that I am a Buddhist monk? I don't have any enemy, I don't have any friend. And you please get lost, don't disturb. The second man said, now there is hope for me. He said, this I had told him already that you are talking nonsense. He is not waiting, not expecting. He is a Buddhist monk. He has no friends, no enemies. You are right. My feeling is that your cow is lost. He said, you are even more stupid than the first one. My cow? A Buddhist monk possesses nothing. Why should I look for somebody else's cow? I don't possess any cow. And the man looked really embarrassed what to do. The third man thought, now the only possibility is what I have said. He said, I can say that you are meditating. He said, nonsense. Meditation is not some activity. One does not meditate. One is meditation. To tell you the truth, so that you all fellows don't get confused, I'm simply doing nothing. Standing here doing nothing, is it objectionable? They said, no, it is not objectionable, just it does not make sense to us, standing here doing nothing. But he said, this is what meditation is. Sitting and doing nothing. Not with your body, not with your mind. Because once you start doing something, either you go into contemplation, or you go into concentration, or you go into action, but you move away from your center. When you are not doing anything at all, bodily, mentally, on no level, when all activity has ceased and you simply are, just being, that's what meditation is. You cannot do it. You cannot practice it. You have only to understand it. And whenever you can find time for just being, and drop all doing. Thinking is also doing. Concentration is also doing. Contemplation is also doing. Even for a single moment, if you are not doing anything, and you are just at your center, utterly relaxed, that is meditation. And once you have got the knack of it, you can remain in that state as long as you want. You can remain into that state finally 24 hours. Once you have become aware of the way how being can remain undisturbed, then slowly you can start doing things. Keeping alert that being is not stirred. That is the second part of meditation. First, learning how just to be, and then learning little actions, cleaning the floor, taking a shower, but keeping yourself centered. Then you can do complicated things. For example, I am speaking to you, but my meditation is not disturbed. I can go on speaking. But at my very center, there is not even a ripple. It is just silent. Utterly silent. So meditation is not against action. It is not that you have to escape from life. It simply teaches you a new way of life. That you become the center of a cyclone. Your life goes on, it goes on really more intensely, with more joy. With more clarity. More vision, more creativity. Yet, you are aloof, just a watcher on the hills, simply seeing all that is happening around you. You are not the doer, you are the watcher. That's the whole secret of meditation, that you become the watcher. Doing continues on its own label, there is no problem. Chopping wood, drawing water from the well, you can do all small and big things. Only one thing is not allowed, and that is your centering should not be lost. That awareness, that watchfulness should remain absolutely unclouded, undisturbed. Meditation is a very simple phenomenon. Concentration is very complicated because you have to force yourself. It is tiring. Contemplation is a little better because you have a little more space to move. You are not moving through a narrow hole and which is going to become more and more narrow. Concentration has a tunnel vision. Have you looked in a tunnel from one side where you are looking, it is big. But if the tunnel is 2 miles long, the other side it is just a small round light, nothing else. Longer the tunnel, the smaller will be the other end. Greater the scientist, longer the tunnel. And he has to focus, and focusing is always a tense affair. It is not natural to mind. Mind is a vagabond. It enjoys moving from one thing to another. It always is excited for the new. In concentration, it is almost imprisoned. In the Second World War, I don't know why they started calling the places where they were keeping the prisoners concentration camps. They had their own meaning. They were bringing all kinds of prisoners and concentrating them there. But concentration is actually bringing all your energies, mind, body, and put into a narrowing hole. It is tiring. Contemplation has more space to play around, to move around, but still, it is a bounded space, not unbounded. Meditation, according to me and my religion, has all the space, the whole existence available. You are the watcher. You can watch the whole scene. There is no effort to concentrate on anything. There is no effort to contemplate about anything. You are not doing all these things. You are simply there watching. Just aware. It is a knack. It is not a science. It is not an art. It is not a craft. It is a knack. So you have to just go on playing with the idea. Sitting in your bathroom, just play with the idea that you are not doing anything. And one day you will be surprised, just playing with the idea, it has happened. Because it is your nature. Just the right moment, one never knows when the right moment is, when the right opportunity is. So you go on playing. Somebody asked Henry Ford, because he had given a statement. That my success is nothing but to catch the right opportunity at the right moment. People either think of opportunities which are in the future. You cannot catch hold of them. Or they think of opportunities which are past. When they are gone and only dust is left on the road, then they become aware that the opportunity is past. Somebody asked, but if you don't think of opportunity in future, you don't think of opportunity which has passed, how suddenly you can get hold of it when it comes? You have to be ready. He said, not ready. You have to be just jumping. One never knows when it comes. When it comes, just jump upon it. What Henry Ford said has tremendous meaning. He said, you simply keep on jumping. You don't wait, don't bother whether opportunity is there or not. You just go on jumping. One never knows when it comes. When it comes, you jump upon it and be gone. If you go on looking into the future, when opportunity is coming, future is unpredictable. If you wait that when it comes, I will catch hold, by the time you become aware that it is there, it is gone. Time is fleeting so fast. Only dust will be there. You rather forget about opportunities. You simply learn jumping. So whenever it comes, and that's what I say to you, you just go on playing with the idea. I am using the word playing because I am a non-serious man and my religion is non-serious. Just go on playing and you have enough time. Anytime lying in your bed, if the sleep is not coming, play with the idea. Why bother about sleep? It will come when it will come. You cannot do anything to bring it. It is not in your hands. So why bother about it? Something which is not in your hands, forget about it. What is in your hands? Why not use this time? Lying in your bed in a cold night under your blanket, cozy, enjoying. Just play with the idea. You need not to sit in the lotus posture in my meditation. You need not torture yourself in any way. If you love the lotus posture, good, you can sit. But Westerners go into India and 6 months it takes for them to learn the lotus posture. And they are torturing themselves so much. And they think that when lotus posture they have learned, they have gained something. The whole India sits in lotus posture. Nobody has gained anything. It is just their natural way of sitting. In a cold country, you need a chair to sit. You can't sit on the ground. In a hot country, who bothers about a chair? Anywhere you sit. No special posture is needed. No special time is needed. Because there are people who think there are special times. No, not for meditation. Any time is right time. Just, you have to be relaxed and playful. And if it does not happen, does not matter. Don't feel sad. Because I am not telling you that it will happen today or tomorrow or within 3 months or 6 months. I am not giving you any expectation that will become a tension in your mind. It can happen any day. It may not happen. It all depends how playful you are. just start play in the bathtub. When you are not doing anything, why not play? Sitting under your shower, you are not doing anything. The shower is doing its work. You simply standing there. Those few moments, just be playful. Walking on the road, walking can be done by the body. You are not needed. The legs do it. Any moment where you can feel relaxed, non-tense, play with the idea of meditation, the way I have explained to you. Just be silent, centered in yourself. And someday, and there are only 7 days, don't be worried. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, at the last, within 7 days, someday it is going to happen. Just enjoy with the idea and play with the idea as many times as you can. If nothing happens, I'm not promising you anything. Nothing happens, that's perfectly good. You enjoyed, you played with the idea. You gave it a chance. Go on giving it a chance. Henry Ford said, go on jumping, and when the chance, the opportunity comes, you jump upon it. I suggest the reverse. You just go on giving chance to meditation. When the right moment comes and you are really relaxed and open, it jumps upon you. And once it jumps upon you, it never leaves. Then there is no way. So think twice before you start playing. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.